Baird versus Renbarger. Mr. Semler.
Thank you, Your Honor. And please the court, my name is Ron Semler. I represent the appellant John Renbarger, Shelbyville police officer in this matter. This is an interlocutory appeal of the denial of qualified immunity in a 1983 action. The case involves the execution of a search warrant seeking evidence of an altered motor number on a 1937 Lincoln Zephyr. The premises authorized to be searched was an industrial complex, which included a large warehouse and at least three smaller outbuildings, which were being used as auto repair shops. When the warrant was executed, one Shelbyville police officer, accompanied by two Indianapolis detectives, was assigned to the office complex of this industrial complex.
Mr. Semler, I want to, we are familiar with the facts. I want to zero in on this. It seems to me that part of the theory that you're presenting to us is the flip side of what we often see from plaintiffs, which is to say that you're operating at a level of generality that's really too high. As I understand your position, you just want to say that police officers in that position have the right to have a weapon that is viewed so that order can be kept while a search is going on. But it's the specifics of this case, just as Anderson against Creighton holds for cases on the plaintiff's side, that strikes me as really all important. So the type of weapon becomes important, you know, a submachine gun being pointed against people who are creating absolutely no trouble. We have to assume that to be the facts. A bunch of Amish men who inadvertently kind of come into the zone that's being protected. I think that, and of course, Judge Hamilton hasn't ruled against your client at all. All he's saying is that there are facts that are in dispute that preclude the granting of the qualified immunity motion. So when you have nonviolent, cooperative people, is it your position that the police can herd them together and point a submachine gun at them?
Well, Your Honor, I believe that at the beginning of the search, Officer Renbarger, number one, did not know who he was dealing with. Number two, did not know how many people he was dealing with.
So suppose what he had come to find is he doesn't know at the beginning of the search. And in one corner of this large warehouse, it turns out they've established a daycare center. So there are a bunch of 7-year-old children, you know, happily playing in an after-school program. Under your view, it's fine for him to point the submachine gun at them, because you seem to be focusing on the fact that he didn't know up front what was going to happen. So he finds this little group of 7-year-old children. He points a submachine gun at them so they can't misbehave during the search.
Well, as I stated in my brief, Your Honor, it's unclear from the court's opinion whether or not the unreasonable factor of this seizure was the fact that he was carrying the machine gun or the fact that he temporarily pointed it.
I understand that, but I'd like you to answer my question. Would your position be the same if there had been a little after-school daycare and it was a group of children? Would your position be he has qualified immunity to point a 9mm submachine gun at them?
No, not to point the gun at them.
So why, if that's the case, once he finds out that it's a group of Amish men, for example, people who don't carry weapons at all, and people who, on the facts as we must take them to be at this point, are completely cooperative, why does he get to point a submachine gun at them?
Well, Your Honor, I believe if the court's opinion is read carefully.
Which one?
the district court's opinion. As far as pointing the gun at individuals, such terms was as wielding the machine gun was used. There is a situation where the officer came upon Mr. Maddox by surprise and pointed the gun at him. There was a testimony that when he entered the room, he swept the room and then lowered the gun.
Well, so he's pointing. I mean, we have Mr. Haddix, I'm looking at page 10 of the district court's opinion, who says there's a police officer with a high-powered rifle pointed right at him. We have other people who are herded in, this group of Amish men are herded in at gunpoint as well. I think, you know, whether we want to call aiming, pointing, I mean, he is pointing this very scary and dangerous weapon at people.
Well, I think the term
aren't causing any trouble.
The term at gunpoint is a very general term.
Well, but it's accurate. I mean, if somebody's pointing a gun at you, you're at gunpoint.
Well, if it's taken literally, it means that the gun is being pointed at you.
Sure.
And you're being held with the gun pointed at you.
And the question is, is it so established that when people are causing no trouble at all, whether it's my children in a daycare center or whether it's the Amish men or whether... Is it so clearly established that no jury could find that this is an unreasonable use of a dangerous weapon?
Well, Your
and
Honor,
I'm saying use of because the pointing itself is a use of.
I believe the standard would be, is it clearly established that a police officer cannot point the weapon?
Right, and that's what I'm trying to get at. If it's your view that... You know, let's say one of the marshals could come into this courtroom and herd all the people in the audience and just hold them at gunpoint just in case somebody decides to misbehave during court when there's absolutely, I mean, they're all just sitting there. Is it your view that there are no limits at all on the use of force in that way?
I believe there are limits on the use of force.
So if there are some limits and the district judge has found that at the moment the facts are disputed, even though your client may certainly at trial be able to show that objectively everything he did was quite reasonable, we're not talking about that. I really want to stress that. I'm not expressing any view about whether your client did something wrong, but on qualified immunity, that gets rid of the case right up front.
Our position is that on the facts, as listed in the court's opinion, and the testimony of the plaintiffs, if that is taken as true, it is still not a violation of the Fourth Amendment as far as an unreasonable seizure.
Okay.
You're in your rebuttal time.
I will save the rest of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sandler. Mr. Palmer?
May it please the Court, Your Honors, Mr. Semler, Jonathan Palmer, attorney for Appellees and plaintiffs below. As Your Honors pointed out, what if you're in your favorite restaurant here in Chicago and come the police, say, hey, we've got a warrant. We're looking for a stolen meat slicer that the owner bought up at the flea market in Sheboygan. Well, guess doesn't concern me until suddenly the officer has an assault rifle in your face. He's hurting you and all the other diners and the wait staff and the cooks and the salesmen who happen to be in there.
Well, you can keep all of them if you keep me out of it, will you? I mean,
yes. Please.
So
that's exactly my point.
I want to know what's important in your view about this case. Is it, number one, the use of a weapon at all? Is it, number two, that it's the particular submachine gun that's used? If it had been a pistol, it would have been fine, but it was a submachine gun. Is it something about this, the relation of the people who are being held to the subject matter of the warrant, this antique Lincoln Zephyr? I mean, because... Frankly, in some ways, it's surprising to think that police who are entering into situations that they never can predict are going to be told by the courts, well, it's okay if you use this gun but not that gun. I mean, I'm not qualified to tell the police what guns they're supposed to use.
Well, let me start at your last point. This was a situation they could predict. They were there the day before. They knew exactly the layout. Officer McCracken had been there many times before on title checks. Renbarger had driven through the facility a number of times on his duties. They knew there were going to be a large number of people there that Renbarger was going to have to retain. Remember, up in the front office, there's three police officers detaining three people. There's one police officer and one civilian searching 4 acres under roof of a warehouse, potentially, outbuildings that are another 11,500, 20 acres of an entire facility, and so they assign wrongfully.
And the warrant focuses only on the Lincoln, right?
Yes, yes. But they had rights to go throughout the whole facility looking for anything they want to look for related to this car. The officers acted unreasonably, could have, you know, with the number of people they had, just say, hey, everybody leave, come back in a couple hours, or stay in your workshop, keep working, don't come in the warehouse. And Renbarger could have been the entrance, the big garage door entrance to the warehouse where the car was parked. I could have done other things reasonably. This was unreasonable, and I think it's unreasonable the use of any weapon, and certainly this weapon, when there's no threat to the police. They had, and Renbarger says that. He says in his deposition he had no reason to fear any violence or any danger from any of these people.
What about the cases that distinguish between use of force, you know, handcuffing people perhaps or something, and simply a display of force, waving around the submachine gun?
Yes. Well, I think that those cases seem to swing on the idea that you're dealing with felons, people under investigation for crimes, violent matters, gangs, guns, drugs, all of these kind of things, where here we have free citizens, innocent people, who have nothing whatsoever to do with this car. And this was just overkill by the police. And again, you have to say, this whole idea about officer safety, well, that's something the lawyers have brought up to the officers after the fact. Why do we know they weren't concerned about that? They didn't even do a weapons check. They didn't pat down anybody. They weren't concerned anybody had a weapon. They were just concerned about detaining all these people for, which I really think is an unreasonable amount of time. The district court hasn't quite agreed with me on that point. But it's an unreasonable amount of time to hold all these people, strangers to the matter, let them go. Both the Indianapolis City Police and the Shelbyville Police announced, well, our policy is to check an ID, do a warrant check, let the people go. They didn't even follow their own policy in this matter. So I think.
So let me ask you this. I mean, even if we were to, I mean, at the moment we still have Saucier against Katz. I don't know if the Supreme Court is going to change the ground underneath our feet on that one.
Yes,
but
I'm aware of that.
Well, we're all wondering that. But on the assumption that something like the bottom line will remain the same, if we assume that there was, on these facts, a violation of the Fourth Amendment, what about the clearly established? We've been told forever, since before Saucier, that police officers aren't supposed to be Fourth Amendment experts. And what was there that should have alerted Officer Renbarger to realize that he was so far over the line that he should be personally liable?
In the cases which the district court relies on, the Jacobs case, that's a case from that had been decided 5 years before this on facts 8 years old. And in the cases we cite in the brief, we start looking at the 1980s, the 1990s. It's a long trend, a long period of time. The word should have got down to the officers that you can't go around pointing submachine guns at innocent bystanders in a search. It, you know, they have the idea that, well, Matthews, you know, they can round up anybody everywhere. I've always wondered what it would be like. I was at the time working in a 12-story office building, 4 floors of which were occupied by the Marion County Prosecutor's Office in Indianapolis. I always wondered what it would have been like for the Shelbyville police to come up there and execute a warrant. But you can't hold all these people. Those cases involve apartments.
So it's that they're uninvolved, it's they're nonviolent, it's they're no suspicion, they're not the target
absolutely
of the warrant.
And if you recall, no one was ever arrested here in this matter. The whole matter was actually just fabricated in Officer McCracken's mind because he didn't know that old cars were hand-stamped at the factory. And, this looks like it's hand-stamped. Well, yes, it was, Officer. That's the way antique cars are. And, he admits finally at the end of his deposition, I don't think it's before you, that, well, I guess I could have just called and asked, come back. That would have been a reasonable thing to do, bring in the expert, Mr. Beard, So what we're asking is, let's go to trial. You know, this matter was filed, summary judgment, a year and a half ago, and we've been delayed this much time. But I think on the facts, and what really concerns me about their position is to say that Noble Gunn was pointed. It was just temporarily pointed. And when you read the record that's before you, on pages 25 through 52 of Mr. Baird, his son, Anthony Joseph Baird, Mr. Jeffries, Mr. Brown, Mr. Haddix, they say, Renbarger had the gun on my guys. He was pointing it at us, pointing and motioning with the gun, had it in his arm. Officer was behind me with that assault rifle. The rifle was hanging around his neck, had the gun in his hand, pointing at people, maybe accidentally, but the barrel was waving and floating around. He had drawn his gun. The gun was out, pointing my direction, at my feet, in his hands in front of me, pointed right at me. This is all in the record. Officer had the gun on me, had a gun in their face, walking back and forth with a gun, having a gun pointed at me. One hand on front, one hand. I mean, he's like this with his gun, and sweeping the room. And then they're saying, well, it was just a momentarily pointing, and therefore it's de minimis. It's not de minimis. This is actionable, and officers should have to be held for that under the law. The law is clear. This is a Fourth Amendment violation. It's unreasonable use of excessive force in this circumstance for innocent people in a free country, in a free society. And, you know, sometimes when you're in law school years ago, you're thinking, well, what's that really about? But, you know, I go to this warehouse to meet with my clients regularly. And I was in Shelbyville that day meeting with other clients. And I'm just imagining, well, what would have been for me to have been caught up in that? So that's part of it, too. You imagine these life circumstances as we find them and say, well, Officer Renbarger, this was a mistake. I think it's interesting to note in the record that he says he's no longer assigned the submachine gun. Good. But he was a SWAT team. They call him Fast Team there in Shelbyville. And he came in his SWAT gear and all his armor and everything. So this was, they tried to say, well, it wasn't a SWAT operation. Well, okay. It wasn't a SWAT operation. There's only one of you. But that's why he was there, to do crowd control of all these Amish folks, contractors, people giving them no trouble at all. So we ask the district court be upheld on this matter. Thank you.
You think there'll be 9mm submachine guns around the Capitol next week when there'll be millions of Americans trying to get close to see it?
Oh, of course. Absolutely. Absolutely, but they're not detaining people. They're not holding people for 2 hours with nothing to drink, can't go to the bathroom, sitting on the floor, can't talk to anyone, can't use your cell phone. So I think there's a difference there. If he'd been just walking around with his gun saying, hey, don't come over to the warehouse, stay over there in your building or leave.
Do you add the fact of his gear beyond the gun as an additional intimidating factor, Mr.?
Well, it's noted in the record by the various individuals that added extra intimidation, as it were, to it, unnecessarily so. These are men, and it's, in our depositions, it's been interesting to see that, it really did affect them, and that we need to go to trial on this matter. Thank you.
Senator?
Briefly, Your Honors, I'll rely upon the record before the court and cited in our brief as far as the testimony of the plaintiffs as far as the use of the weapon.
Mr. Semler, was there anything in the record below that suggests that when executing warrants in connection with presumed chop shops or places which alter VIN numbers, that extra precaution is taken? Do you have anything in the record, too?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor. This is just any time a search warrant is executed, the police officer does not have the choice as far as whether to engage with the people that are on the premises or not. They have to follow the court's order and engage with those people, and consequently they need to.
No, I was just wondering whether or not internal regulations of the Shelbyville Police Department or anywhere else prescribes a
There are such things as you are required to wear your bulletproof vest when you're executing a search warrant. Just from standard police procedure across
the country. Offered by way of deposition and testimony?
So, again, this is a situation where one police officer was assigned to do a job that was much too big for one officer. He could not safely pat these people down for guns without watching the rest of them. Could not even let them leave the premises because he could not himself escort them off. He was one police officer, but that's not his fault that he was the only police officer assigned. Consequently, in order to take unqualified, unquestioned control of the situation, he chose to carry this particular firearm. We would note in our brief the discussion in McNair versus Coffey, and that in Williams versus City of Champaign, indicating that there is a serious question as to whether or not a display of force as opposed to a use of force would violate the Fourth Amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.